All right. Well, good morning, everyone. It's 9 o'clock, so we'll go ahead and kick this meeting off. We'll start with a roll call. Gabby, are you going to take that today?
I will. Thank you, Chris. Good morning to you all. This is roll call for attendance for the January 20th, 22 Advisory Committee. I will proceed with roll call. Harupa Services, Harupa Community Services District.
Chris Birch.
City of Chino. City of Chino. We'll round back at them. City of Chino Hills.
Ron Craig.
Thank you. City of Ontario. Let me see, Chris. City of Ontario. City of Pomona.
Chris Diggs.
Thank you, Chris. I thought I saw you on there or your name. City of Upland. City of Upland.
Brady.
Thank you, Brady. Cucamonga Valley Water District.
Eduardo Espinoza.
Montana Union Water Company.
Josh Swift.
Montana Water Company.
Chris Feely.
Minor 2 Monta Vista Irrigation Company.
Justin Scottco.
Monta Vista Water District.
Justin Scottco.
Minor 1 San Antonio Water Company.
Brian Lee.
And now on behalf of the non-ag, Brian Guy.
Brian Guy is here.
Thank you. On behalf of the ag pool.
Jeff Pearson is present.
Thank you. Mr. DeBoom. Mr. DeHaan. Bob Feenstra. Mr. Heitzing. Mr. Petersma. Mr. Vandenhevel. Mr. LaBruchere. Mr. Kane. I see Mr. Kane, you're muted.
Okay. Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. And Mr. Hall.
Is Jimmy Medrano alternate for Pete Hall?
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Chair, you have a roll call.
Okay, thank you. There was a couple, I think it was Chino and Ontario. Did anybody come on from?
Yes, from.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is Christopher Quattro, Ontario. I'm here.
Thank
Sorry
you.
For the delay.
Thank
no
you, Chris.
Thanks, Dave.
Sorry, this is Marilyn Levin, an alternate.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you.
Gabby, could you please also call for the non-ag pool, California Steel Industries, as well as City of Ontario?
Yes. California Steel Industries. California Steel Industries. Okay. I'm sorry, Anna, who was the other one that we're missing?
You've already called Ontario.
Okay, I have.
We're good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Gabby.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Mr. Chair.
All right. Peter, any additions or reorders to the agenda?
No, Mr. Chairman, no additions or reorder to the agenda. Thank you.
All right, great. Thanks. Next, we have the consent calendar. Anybody wish to pull anything from the consent calendar? All right. Do I have a motion in a second?
Eno moves approval.
Thanks, Dave.
Second by non-ag.
Thanks, Brian. All right. Is there any discussion? If not, I'll call for opposition. Otherwise, we'll remove this as a batch. Hearing no opposition, the consent calendar is approved. Let's go on to business items. So we'll start with the dry year yield program. Peter, are you going to kick us off on this?
Yes. Yes, I will. Thank you. The subject matter was presented to the pool committees for their information in November of 2021. And following the pool committee meetings, the board asked staff to consult with the parties, prepare a summary of the issue, and make any pertinent recommendations. So we're working on that, and we're planning to conclude that effort during the January 22 board meeting next week. We've had a number of meetings with various stakeholders in December and again in January, and we've summarized the results of those conversations in the staff report. We also brought this to the pool committees last week and asked for any further input. And today we're asking the advisory committee for any further advice or assistance that would help us in reporting back to the board. Specifically, we're tracking down the three questions, whether there has been any harm, and if the provisions are unchanged, could there be any harm in the future? Whether the accounting and assessments for takes under the 2019 letter agreement provisions should be handled differently than they have been, possibly resulting in a revision to the previous assessment packages. And finally, whether the advisory committee has any advice or direction for Watermaster to present to the operating committee any modifications to the dry year yield program going forward. We're looking forward to anything the advisory committee has to offer. Thank you.
Thank you for the report, Peter. And thanks for the history on the staff report. Open it up for discussion. All right. I think the process is if nobody has discussion on this, then there is no advice that goes to the board, correct?
Yes. No, nothing further than is our takeaway. Oh, very well. Shall we move on to item two, item B?
If there's no comments on A, we'll move on. All right. Going on to the 2022 update to the 2019 rules and regs. Peter, are you kicking this off too?
Yes, I am. Thank you. As advisory committee members are aware, Watermaster is updating the rules and regulations in response to the court's order regarding the local storage limitation solution. The update is narrowly focused. It's a rifle shot. It's not a comprehensive update of the rules and regulations. And I'm emphasizing that point because I want to make it clear that we're not looking to change things from the rules and regulations that were not affected by the local storage limitation solution. If anything was not affected, it is not being proposed to change, and we would not recommend changing it at this time. A comprehensive update of the rules and regulations is something that's of interest to Watermaster, and the board's direction is to look at the rules and regs no less frequently than every 2 years. When we proposed it in the budget last year, the appropriative pool was not interested in that, so we put it on the shelf. We understand that there is interest from some, so we will propose that again in the budget in this coming year and see if it's something that's approved in the budget. In the meantime, for this set of comments, for this set of updates to the rules and regulations, we received comments from the state of California and the city of Ontario, and we received very late comments from city of Chino and Monta Vista Water District. We responded to those verbally during last week's pool committee meetings. Brad is available to review the comments and responses if necessary. We've not received any comments since then, so we are ready to move forward with the adoption of the update to the 2019 Chino Basin Water Master Rules and Regulations and recommend advisory committee approval of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Discussion from the group. This is an item that I think we do have to vote on. So comments, questions, thoughts?
Mr. Chair, Chino has comments.
Yeah, please go, Dave.
Thank you, and thank you, Peter, for teeing it up. City of Chino did submit comments. They were late. Watermaster did respond to our comments verbally at the pool meeting last week. We have reflected on Watermaster's explanation or Watermaster's disinclination to make the changes that we had requested. We believe that the proposed revised rules still contain language that is potentially confusing as it relates to excess carryover, which is a right of the overlying non-ag pool and of the appropriative pool. We attempted to suggest minor changes to the rule language to remove the confusion. We still believe that those revisions would be appropriate. And so as for the rule language that is being proposed today, which does not reflect Chino's requested revisions, we intend to object to a motion to approve the rules as presented today.
Peter, do you or Brad have any comments or responses to the excess carryover discussion comment?
I need to reflect. This is new to me. I don't know if Brad has any comments.
Yeah, in terms of the treatment of excess carryover, the changes in this version of the rules and regs as compared to the existing rules and regs are not... They don't change anyone's ability to get an agreement for storage of excess carryover. There's a provision in the rules and regs that talks about treatment of excess carryover. It's 8.1E called storage of safe yield as carryover water. Talks about excess carryover requiring an agreement, local storage agreement with Water Master. That's not proposed to be changed at all. There's a former section 8.2H, which I think is now 8.2G, that talks about the limitations on storage of excess carryover. The provision previously said after 2010, Water Master could place reasonable restrictions on local storage agreements containing excess carryover. That comes right out of Peace Agreement 5.2B, Romanet 10, excuse me. And the change from the prior version of the rules and regs to the proposed version, it says that there won't be, or the restriction is through 2035 to match the skinny storage or local storage limitation solution CEQA analysis. It looks like there was an email from Chino yesterday at 4:45 p.m. Kind of reiterating these comments. We don't think there's a material change in the treatment of excess carryover, certainly not a limitation on the ability to store excess carryover from the existing rules and regulations to the proposed rules and regs. The thing that's really changed is that the storage quantity overall has been expanded through the local storage limitation solution CEQA analysis.
Thank you, Brad. Dave, did that help anything with you?
Well, I appreciate Brad's explanation. Yet we still think that the rule language can be improved, and we certainly welcome the opportunity to have a conversation with Water Master Council and staff to seek improved language. The language as it has been presented in the package today, we object to.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Any other comments from anybody else?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, please, Chris, go ahead.
Is there a way for, or could this item be delayed until the next meeting so that Chino and Watermaster can come up with an agreed upon language? I don't know if there's an urgency here or not.
Well, I do know that this was something that was sent around close to a month and a half ago, I think. So I'm not sure if it has to go next week, but I don't know. I just hate delaying things if we're not going to be able to find resolution. I don't know, Peter, is it time sensitive, critical?
It's sensitive only in the way that the more effectively we can do our work, the less it costs for everybody. We did circulate this in November, and of course we were welcoming and inviting everybody's comments, and very late last minute comments only add to the time and effort. The court has not set a due date for when this is due, and we can't cure it in a week. It would have to be delayed for a month and be carried again at pool advisory and board meetings next month. Having said that, I think if you listen through Brad's explanation, is we're not changing existing provisions on carryover, which is the city's concern, and the total storage capacity under which carryover is accounted for is being increased. I don't know that we would be particularly looking to change any language responsive to Chino's concern, especially if it goes against the court's mandate for Watermaster to regulate storage and control storage. And that is something that I'm hearing in Chino's comments. So, of course, it's your choice. If you want to delay for a month, you can, and we'll bring it back next month. Or if you want to take a vote today, we can do that as well, whatever you want.
All right. Thank you, Peter. Any other comments, or Chris, do you have any other thoughts on that?
No, I don't have any other thoughts. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other comments on the proposed staff recommendation? All right. Do I hear anybody wants to move this now?
Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff Pearson. I would like to see the flavor of the vote, whether or not the advisory committee does prefer to hold it over. So I will make a motion to approve the 2022 update to the Watermaster rules and regulations.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Do I hear a second?
This is Marilyn Levin. I'll second the motion.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Well, then I guess we'll move to a vote. So, Gabby, can you bring up the roll call, please?
Mr. Chair, will that be a volume vote or voice vote?
It has to be a volume vote, Gabby.
Okay. Janine, can you bring up the volume vote? Okay, we'll continue.
Go ahead.
Okay. Minor 1, Sacco?
Sacco votes yes.
Minor 2, Monta Vista Irrigation?
Justin Sacco, yes.
City of Chino Hills?
Ron Craig, yes.
City of Chino?
Dave Crosley, no.
Cucamonga Valley Water District?
Eduardo Espinoza, yes.
Fontana Union Water Company?
Josh Swift, yes.
Fontana Water Company?
Chris Feely, yes.
Harupa Community Services District?
Chris Birch, yes.
Monta Vista Water District?
Justin Scott Coe, yes.
City of Ontario?
Christopher Botch, yes.
City of Pomona?
Chris Diggs, yes.
City of Upland?
Braden Yu, yes.
On behalf of the Agriculture Poll?
Jeff Pearson, yes.
And on behalf of the Non-Agricultural Poll?
Brian Guy, yes.
Okay, calculating the quorum. Quorum has been met. And the item passes with a majority vote of 95.83 votes for item 2B, the 2022 update to the 2019 Chino Basin Water Master Rules and Regulations.
All right. Thank you, Gabby. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Chris.
All right. We're moving on to item 2C, and that's the 2020 OBMP implementation plan. And I believe this is advice and assistance, too. So, Peter, you're going to kick us off?
Mr. Chairman, Edgar will, but before he does, I do want to close the loop that Brett and I will reach out to Dave Crosley and Jimmy Gutierrez, and we'll be happy to meet with them and go through to discuss their concerns. We do take everyone's concerns seriously and would like to help them understand our position.
I appreciate that, Peter. And if there are updates, we can always bring those back too, right?
Of course. Thank you. Thank you. Item C, Edgar.
Thank you, Peter. Good morning, members of the Advisory Committee. The item before you is the OBMP Implementation Plan update. This comes to you at the recommendation of the Water Master Board. As you recall, the 2020 OBMP was updated during 2019, adopted by the board in October 2020. And in order to implement the actions identified in the 2020 OBMP, there needs to be an update to the implementation plan and also CEQA review. So at this moment, we are requesting advice and assistance from the advisory committee to take to the board whether or not to advance and budget for the necessary studies and support for the development of the 2020 OBMP implementation plan and the necessary CEQA review. Having an updated implementation plan and updated environmental review allows the region to access the increasingly available funds and grants that are coming for water infrastructure and drinking water, et cetera. So with that, if there's any questions, I'm ready to answer them.
Thank you, Edgar. Comments, thoughts, questions from the group? We've been talking about this for a long time. So no one else has comments anymore.
Hi, Mr. Chair. This is Christopher Washington with Ontario.
Thanks, Chris. Glad someone stepped up. All right. Sure. What you got?
Thank you very much. And this is a comment reiterating what I said at the appropriate pool meeting. It is Ontario's view that there does need to be a negotiated implementation agreement completed first among the parties before any additional CEQA work or additional studies should be added to the budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Other thoughts, comments? I think we all probably had robust discussions of this last week.
Mr. Chair, it's Ron Craig, City of Chino Hills.
Hi, Ron.
The City of Chino Hills feels it's very important that we get this CEQA accomplished, and to the extent that there's agreements, implementation plan that mirrors what the OBMP update is set forth, we believe it's important that this move forward. In July of 2020, IUA was ready to adopt a programmatic EIR that lays out a lot of fundamental opportunities for the basin and stakeholders within the basin to move forward with various projects. And as staff has outlined, it is very important that the basin be positioned, and we agree with this, to take advantage of grants and other funding opportunities, infrastructure funding opportunities that are coming down the, not just coming down the pipe, but are readily available right now. Yeah, we don't have CEQA to cover it. So I would like to have the advisory committee, I guess this is a motion, you know, recommend to the board of directors to include in the upcoming draft budget the layout, the funds that would be required to accomplish this CEQA and to support whatever implementation agreement put in place, whatever that process ends up being. I know it's a little tough to budget some of that, but I think it's important that the pools and the advisory committee have a draft budget that that lays it out, and we can have a final decision on what those numbers are and what the final budget is. But I think that's my motion.
Thank you, Ron. Before we continue with discussion, do I have a second?
Yes, Jeff Pearson, second.
Thanks, Jeff.
Justin Scott Coe, Mr. Chair.
Comments? Yeah, go ahead, Justin.
I guess I'm still a little bit confused as to what additional studies or planning efforts are required. We have an OBMP update report, so Water Master has fulfilled its commitment in redeveloping the OBMP under the judgment, as they have the discretion to do. Consistent with the first OBMP in 2000, the parties then negotiated OBMP implementation plan, which was incorporated and part of the peace agreement, and the parties agreed to that. And now we're, you know, Mon Vista has and continues to stand ready to take that next step in negotiating an implementation plan that would, I think, on my understanding, then be the project that would be subject to CEQA review. We seem to be doing it differently now, and it feels like I'm not quite sure Monta Vista supports additional studies or planning efforts until we understand what is required in order for us to all parties to the peace agreement, which is essentially everybody here on the advisory committee, plus others that are represented here, come to agreement on an implementation plan, which is an amendment to the peace agreement. So, and the amendment to the peace agreement is something that all parties to the peace agreement have to agree to. So I'm a little unclear in terms of just process here. I don't want to get process in the way of opportunities. That's not what Monta Vista is trying to do here, just trying to understand the appropriate process. And budgeting for expenditures that are seem to be ahead of the amending of the peace agreement, meaning a change to the OBMP implementation plan, I'm a little concerned that budget process, which is, you know, a majority vote, is getting in the way or getting ahead of what's supposed to be a consensus of the parties of the peace agreement in terms of its amendment. So I hope I expressed our concerns in terms of process adequately. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it. I don't know if staff has any.
Chair?
Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, I have just one quick response to Justin's question or concern. I think I appreciate his comment relative to not letting process get in the way of opportunity. I think that captures where we're coming from very succinctly. What I would be anticipating, and based on what I've heard and seen from staff's previous reporting on this that we would see in the budget whatever technical study updates. I think it was made pretty clear to us back when the program EIR from 2020, July of 2020, was challenged. There were some specific points relative to updated technical models and some other things that it was terms that was challenged on. And it was laid out to us pretty clearly when we went through the skinny storage project and some environmental work on that, you know, what would need to be done to tune up the program EIR that was brought forward back in July of 2020. So my anticipation is we'll see a budget, and this is why I'm making this recommendation. We'll see a budget that includes the necessary work to get the EIR up to speed and ready to go in front of IUA, and that you know, those technical study updates would need to happen, you know, we'll call it in parallel with us working on the amendment. So there's a bit of a maybe a chicken and an egg circumstance here, but I feel on behalf of the basin, it's important to show that we're moving forward with those technical studies that are necessary to support getting a successful EIR.
I appreciate that, Ron. I still have a concern just in terms of the need for an implementation plan to kick off all of this. And that implementation plan amendment requires amending the peace agreement. So I just, the simultaneity is a little bit of concern because it's an overlay of different processes. So we're ready to move forward. Frankly, we've been trying to, you know, provide input and even drafts for, opportunities for, us to discuss the amending of the implementation plan. And so we would just reiterate that that really does need to be something we do. And that would serve as the basis for what all that you described, it seems to me, would be based on. And so that's where I'm just having a hard time still. So I look forward to resolving our concerns with everybody's help.
Thank you, Justin. I appreciate your comments, and thanks, Ron. Peter, does staff have any comments on this?
Yeah, you know, this might be helpful, Justin. I understand the chicken and egg dilemma that as is presented, and I appreciate you having an open mind and looking for answers. And so I would put it to you and the members of the advisory committee this way. This is all about creating options to make the most out of your resource. And the process is to proceed with a CEQA, to explore all possibilities and cover them under one comprehensive cumulative impact evaluation for anything and everything the parties want to do, including storage and recovery projects, including managing water quality for the continuous threat of upcoming emerging constituents, and anything and everything else that's in the exhibits that were shown before. That CEQA is I would call it, and please don't quote me any further, but I would call it the great enabler. This allows you to go forward managing your basin, and it's the great enabler in terms of bringing grant funding in, whether the EIR itself, the CEQA effort, is grant funded or not, but having it ready is what unlocks the door to a lot more support, which we've been very very much helped in the past. And so I don't know that we have the vision today to necessarily identify all the projects. And so the idea is move forward with a CEQA while at the same time updating your peace agreement. And the peace agreement will describe how to behave, but in and of itself, hopefully would lead to more possibilities in the future. It would be open and not as prescriptive as we'll only do X, Y, and Z. But it's more of a prescription of this is how we will manage and will remain open to future opportunities that come up. So what we're suggesting is, as the ad on TV says, why not both? proceed with both forward. The CEQA work has already been done. We do need to touch up one or two areas that would address the points that were challenged in the past and move forward. I think that you would find that to be a great tool at your disposal moving down the road. And I don't know that we can do it as quickly as we did the 2020. That was record time, but we can certainly move it forward, finish it up, while at the same time, the implementation plan gets updated. That implementation plan hopefully wouldn't take too long, but considering the environment, we're still kind of in a hybrid slash virtual environment. And considering that it's complicated and there's so many interests at the table, that could take a while. And we would think that the stakeholders would not want to wait for that to finish before they start CEQA under the current climate of grant funding. So I hope that helps.
Thank you, Peter. Other comments from the group?
Chair Birch?
Yeah, hi, Brian.
Hello there, sir. And I like saying Chair Birch so much. I just, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of those who have come before us in regards to management of the basin, and they've really done a phenomenal job. So I'm very thankful for that. I'm concerned moving forward about any plans, and I support moving forward with the CEQA documents, but the projects that come from that, I really want to be sure we do a clear and careful value proposition review of every project. I know that there have been hopes and dreams for past projects that haven't materialized fully, and I want to make sure we go into all these projects eyes wide open for the best value for the basin and for the members of this group. It's going to be important that we don't spend a lot of money to advance the basin a minimal amount. I want to make sure the money gets funded into projects that will make the most bang for our buck there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate the comment. All right. Other comments, thoughts? So we do have a motion on the table, and I'll try my best to, I think this is what Ron, tell me if this is different, to include in the draft budget to lay out the funds to accomplish the CEQA and in support of the implementation agreement. What I heard.
Correct. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And that was seconded by Mr. Pearson. Any further discussion?
No, Mr. Chairman, that is my understanding. My second stands.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. All right. If there's no other comments, Peter, do you want to vote on this, or how does this work?
It's your committee, Mr. Chairman, Chair Birch.
Yeah, I'd like to do a vote on this so that we're clear on what we're providing to the board for direction. Thank you.
Okay, we'll do the volume vote. Okay.
Thanks, Kevin. Go ahead.
Minor one, Sacco.
Sacco votes yes.
Can you state your name for the record, Minor one?
Sorry, Brian Lee.
Thank you, Brian. Minor two, Monta Vista Irrigation.
Monta Vista Irrigation will abstain.
City of Chino Hills.
Ron Craig, yes.
City of Chino.
Dave Crosley, Chino abstains.
Cucamonga Valley Water District?
Eduardo Espinoza, yes.
Montana Union Water?
Josh Swift, yes.
Montana Water Company?
Chris Feely, yes.
Harupa Services District?
Chris Birch, yes.
Monta Vista Water District.
Justin Scott Coe, Water District will vote no.
City of Ontario.
Christopher Quach votes no.
City of Pomona.
Diggs, yes.
City of Upland.
Bring you, yes.
On behalf of the Ag Pool?
Jeff Pearson, yes.
On behalf of the non-Ag Pool?
Brian Guy, yes.
We'll calculate the votes. Quorum was met. And the vote passes by majority vote with 68.742.
All right. Thank you, Gabby. Appreciate it. And before we move on to the next item, I just, from my perspective, I know Edgar said this. We got a lot of money that's coming down the pipeline from the state. We just heard a couple weeks ago that that's going to be up to close to $6 billion in water type project funding. And we got a lot of work to do as a team to get to the point where we have projects that are ready to try to go after that funding. But if the past has been any indicator of what we can do in the future, if we can get us all together, we'll be very successful in getting some of that funding and doing great projects. And I totally agree with Brian Lee with regards to making sure that we get projects that make sense to move forward with. But this is to get to the point that we can even decide if we want to move forward projects. So thanks for everybody providing comments, and hopefully we can work through some of the concerns that people have. All right. Moving on to reports and updates. Brad, you doing legal today?
Morning, Chair Birch, members of the committee. I don't have any updates from what I presented last week, given the time and that there's a RIPCOM meeting waiting on this meeting. It's up to you whether you'd like me to present it again. The only thing I would say is we have not heard any new information on the February 4th hearing. And as far as we know, that will still proceed with the ability to appear in person. If anything changes, we will let you know in advance of the hearing.
Thank you, Brad. Does anybody have any questions for Brad that you want to put him on the spot about? All right. Thank you, Brad. Appreciate it. Engineer report. We have Andy today.
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I hear you great, Andy. Thank you.
Good. And I will force you to listen to me. So we are giving the report here. I do have four items, but we will try to go through them quickly here. The first is on the response to storage questions. As you may be aware, the Ag Pool representatives, some of them, submitted to Watermaster staff two formal questions related to storage in the Chino Basin. And Peter subsequently opened this up to all Watermaster parties and asked anyone to submit additional questions that they may have on the topic of storage. Two additional parties did submit questions and comments. It was Rick Rees representing the state of California and Ron Craig representing the city of Chino Hills. And Watermaster prepared formal responses to those questions and distributed those questions and the Watermaster responses to the Watermaster family on Monday, January 10th. So you should have received those. Watermaster is going to host a workshop on February 1st at 10 a.m., which is in about 10, 11 days from now, to discuss the questions and Watermaster's responses to those questions and receive any additional Q&A. So you've got that to look forward to. Garrett Rapp is here this morning to give an update on the Safe Yield Reset methodology efforts that are ongoing. Garrett, are you here?
Yes. Good morning, the advisory committee. Can we pull up the presentation, please? So I wanted to give an update on a request from the advisory committee. Back during the November advisory committee meeting when you all voted to approve the budget amendment for the Safe Yield methodology update. The request was to develop a detailed scope, schedule, and budget at a planning level to estimate the effort to implement the Safe Yield court order through fiscal year 2025. And fiscal year 2025 is the court order deadline for the update and reevaluation of the Safe Yield. And so I wanted to go through that in a little bit of detail. Next slide, please. So like I said, we're responding to this request. We've written a letter documenting our assumptions and our planning level estimates for the various tasks to support the implementation of the Safe Field Court Order. We've outlined this scope into four primary tasks following the elements of the court order. The task one is the update of the Safe Field Reset methodology, and that's one that's currently going right now. The second task is the annual data collection and evaluation, which is also occurring right now. And then the third task is the update of the model and the reevaluation of the safe yield, which we anticipate will start in the next fiscal year. And then our fourth task of project management. Next slide, please. This is a adaptation of the schedule that we've shown in prior meetings, showing the different tasks to implement the Safe Field Court Order through June 2025. The first task, updating the Safe Field Reset methodology, is shown in the blue bars. Like I mentioned, we're already working on this, and we anticipate the submittal of the updated Safe Field Reset methodology to the court and that approval process to finish sometime in the next fiscal year. Task two, the annual data collection and evaluation. As an annual process, we're undergoing the first annual data collection and evaluation right now. And by the end of fiscal year 2025, we'll have done four annual reports as shown here in the orange bars. Task three is the update of the model and reevaluation of the safe yield. We anticipate starting this in the next fiscal year and having this done by the June 30th, 2025 deadline. And supporting these three tasks is the peer review process that's required by the court order through June 2025. And for this letter that we've developed, and we'll have a final version to submit to the parties for review next week, where we took each of these tasks and detailed them with some key milestones and made sure that we communicated that we are giving sufficient time for peer review during this process to incorporate any feedback that the parties and their consultants might have. Next slide, please. This is a Gantt chart that we've created for task one. This is the Safe Field Reset Methodology Update task. Through early 2023. And so this documents the work that we've already completed and the work that we're undergoing currently, and the schedule for allowing the parties time to get feedback and review the technical memorandum that we will distribute to the parties for their review, documenting our proposed Safe Field Reset methodology update. Next slide, please. This shows a Gantt chart of next year's anticipated effort for the data collection and evaluation. This looks fairly similar to the process that we've been implementing this year, where we have our annual data collection and evaluation process, and we have multiple workshops throughout the year to review our findings and get any feedback from the parties. Next slide, please. And finally, this is a Gantt chart of task three, the update of the model and the reevaluation of the safe yield. The tasks that are highlighted are the major modeling tasks, and then finally, supporting the court approval process. The court approval process will only be necessary if the reevaluated safe yield would be more or less than 2.5% from the current safe yield. So we've incorporated between each of those major modeling tasks, we've incorporated time for preparing for workshops and having workshops to communicate our results to the parties and encourage any feedback during those workshops. So like I mentioned, we'll be getting this letter out next week. This will include not only the this detailed scope and schedule, but also an anticipated high-level budget estimates for these for future years. And these will likely change in the next few years as the annual budgets are developed. So look forward to that next week. Happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Garrett. Any questions for Garrett before we move back to Andy? All right. Thanks, Garrett. Appreciate it.
Andy, Mr. Chairman, just a note, that schedule, as Garrett mentioned, that schedule was developed at the request of the appropriative pool, and we're certainly hopeful that it provides you the dates for the workshops, and it's early enough that people can put it on their calendars and avoid conflicts.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, Andy, back to you.
Thank you. Just a quick update on the activities of the Ground Level Monitoring Committee. As you likely know, we are in the process of developing a subsidence management plan for the northwest portion of Management Zone 1. And Watermaster has constructed and calibrated some one-dimensional computer simulation models in northwest MZ1 to simulate the deformation of the aquifer system, to try to understand how future pumping and recharge may affect subsidence in this area. And it has plans to use the models to develop guidance for subsidence management in this area. And Watermaster published a technical memorandum on the construction and calibration of these models. And we've received comments back from the technical consultants. Thank you very much. And we are right now in the process of responding to those comments, and we're calling the consultants if need be to work through some of their comments and work on our responses. And our hope is to get concurrence from the consultants that the models are indeed ready to be used to simulate the future pumping and recharge plans and develop subsidence management criteria in this area. So we'll have more for you on that in the near future. And my last topic is a proposed hex chrome MCL. The state board has recently issued a notice of preparation for a draft EIR for the adoption of an MCL for hex chrome. And Watermaster has commented on the NOP. The state, just a little bit of background here, the state board is considering 17 potential MCLs for hex chrome that range from 1 through 25 micrograms per liter. And what we did is we read through the NOP, we inspected the existing water quality data that are in Watermaster's databases, and we made estimates of the number of wells that in the basin that could require treatment or blending if one of these MCLs are adopted. And so we summarized some of those statistics and we included it in a comment letter. The basic gist of the comment letter was if an MCL is adopted at the lower range between 1 and 25 micrograms per liter, that a significant number of drinking water wells in the Chino Basin would be impacted, could require blending and treatment. And we submitted those comments to the state board. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions on any of those items that we covered on the engineer's report.
Thank you, Andy. Anybody have comments or questions for Andy? He's the only person I know that can make a one-dimensional model sound complicated. So, all right. Any questions for Andy? All right, we'll move on. Thank you,
Andy. Thank
you. All right, the CFO update, Joe.
Thank you, Mr. Birch, or Chairman Birch. How are you today?
Chris. Thanks, Joe. Go ahead.
The items that I have today are the same as were presented at the pools. There are no changes.
Thank you, Joe. Does anybody have questions or anything come up from last week that anybody wants to ask Joe about? All right. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Peter, GM report update.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My report is the same as last week as well. I'm happy to repeat any portion of it advisory committee members would like. and or answer any questions.
Anybody have any questions or follow-up that they need from Peter? All right, thank you. All right, we'll move to the IUA report. It's written and it's in the package, but I understand we might have, is Andy Campbell doing a groundwater recharge thing today? Is that my understanding?
I think so. Andy, are you with us today?
I am.
All right. Yeah,
thank you. I had to find my unmute button.
There you go.
Thanks, Andy, for joining us. And then I don't know if staff, after Andy does his update, I think Josh might be on the line. So, all right, we'll start with Andy then. Go ahead, Andy. Thank you for joining us.
All right. Thank you, Chippers. That does have a nice ring to it. So we had a great December, and I wanted to come to the advisory committee and give you an update on our activities. So a lot of you may not be able to get out to the basin, so I just wanted to start out with a slide of Etowana Debris Basin, full of water and spilling. Is a great opportunity to get water in this basin, which doesn't have our SCADA system. It doesn't have any pipelines to it, so it sits and waits for storms. And this year, we're able to have it fill up and capture a lot of water. Next slide, please. So this is kind of the money slide I like to present to everybody, how we've done over the last 12 months. And so you can see back in January was really the last year, last month, we really had any significant amount of stormwater at about 1,700 acre feet. That's not really a big storm month, but it's one of the biggest ones we've had. And then we can move forward up to December, just this last month, and we had over 5,600 acre feet. So three times what we had back in January. So it was a very good month. I'll show you another slide here, but kind of shows we're approaching kind of the limit on a per month basis on a basin for stormwater that past month. Two really good rain events and a couple of small rain events that followed those. Next slide, please. So here's our daily December rainfall capture. You can see on the 14th, really good storm, 1,800 acre feet in that day. We had a little over a week of no rainfall. But we then got another similar sized rainfall, but we don't quite capture as much. We percolated some of the water, but there's still water in the basins. The basins fill to capacity and start to spill. So then the additional days of rain start to really fall off. We're capturing generally what we're infiltrating and refilling back in the basin. Kind of zooming in on that first 100 feet, I wanted just to show you, you can kind of see on our recycled water side that we're gradually ramping down our recycled water for those rain days. Next slide, please.
Andy, on that slide, yes. Can we go back
to the slide?
It also looks, I'm looking at January 1 of 22, December 31, January 1, January 2, that we were able to put in recycled water while some storm water was coming off because the storm was attenuating. And if I'm reading that right, it tells me that you and your group are very attuned into what's happening, what capacity is out there, and maximizing the recharge.
Yeah, thank you for noticing that. So you can also see that we're getting some stormwater post rain. So first photo of Etowana Debris Basin, there's water coming off the mountains, and so we're making sure we're quantifying that water. And there's continuing to trickle water through the watershed. It's gradually running off into the basin, so we're capturing that as well. But we do look at the NOAA website forecast. It's set as my homepage. When I log in every day, I can get an instant here. Here's what's happening in the next 5 to 7 days. And if it's clear and we have room in the basin and we don't think we're going to lose that water, then yes, we will start putting water back in the basins to maximize the use of those basins. Next slide, please. So I've been using this slide probably for the last couple of years or so. I hope you've gotten used to how it's formatted, but it's essentially an accumulative storm flow from July to June. So it's basically flat in the summer, goes up steeply in the winter, and flattens off as we enter the summer again. And so if we had back in November, that black dashed line, which is our current year, was showing we're in the red. We're in one of our driest years on record. But then all of a sudden, December happened. We got that 5,600 acre feet. And we're, if we ended the year here, you know, we'd be in the yellow. But I'm sure we'll get something more, not so much in January, but hopefully February and March will bring us a little bit more stormwater and we'll end up in some of those blue years. The dashed blue line, as you can see, is our best year to date in the program. That was back in fiscal year 10-11. We were about 17,000 acre feet for that year. So we've got a ways to go. It was a good December. Let's hope it keeps coming. Next slide, please. So I wanted to talk a little bit about our preparation for storms so you can understand sort of what we do in the recharge program. I mentioned that I use the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's website as my homepage. And what I get is these little icons that show percent chance of rain. I can drill down a little bit deeper and I get trends. So here's an example where the trend showed about a 40 to 50% chance of rain last week, or actually earlier in this week. And it shows the intensity about, you know, 400ths of an inch in any, you know, 4 hour window. And so to me, if it's over 30% and it's a measurable amount of rain, it's worth us doing a response. Less than 30% and no measurable rain, you know, typically doesn't require us to really scramble the troops to monitor what's happening. Next slide, please. So once we monitor that rainfall, here's the next step we do. We look at reducing our recycled water deliveries so that we don't pump unnecessarily up to the basins and lose that water. So for December, these are our daily recycled water deliveries. You can see we ramped down from the, you know, 4th of December down towards the 14th of December when we had that really intense rainfall. After that intense rainfall, there was no forecast for rain. So we started ramping back up. By about the 15th or 16th, not the 15th, by about the 20th, we started seeing that big storm come in. Again, we shut it off over a couple of days. And then the recycled water was off through about December 30th. And then as that storm faded away, we started bringing the recycled water back online. And currently we're not quite up at full capacity, but we're close to it. We're about 18 million gallons per day of water at this point in time. Next slide, please. So our next step in our storm preparation process is to look through our SCADA system to see if we have any problems that we need to manage manually. And so this is a hydrograph of the Montclair basins. Each of those lines represents one of the basins. So Montclair 1 is the, they're all blue, but there's, you know, different shades of blue. I highlighted Montclair 4 basin in red. And what we're seeing there is a lot of erratic behavior on this level sensor. In hindsight, it didn't fail completely during these storms, but the threat was there that we might just lose this site or that piece of equipment would have to replace it. And so that makes us go out to that site and start monitoring that manually. And there's a couple basins we do that for. Etowana Debris Basin is one because there is no SCADA components there, no level sensors. So we look for sites that have failed or are failing and are waiting some maintenance or equipment replacement. Montclair 4 was one of those. Next slide, please. And so before each storm, I get my staff together. This is a field form we've developed that we go over before each field response that basically is a checklist. You know, what do we want to do today before the storm? We've got check boxes there for, is this a during the storm or after the storm response, who it is. We highlight what we want to get. And we go out and take some notes about what we see. This enables us to open and close valves according to a daily determination, measure staff gauges if we have level sensors that fail, and also make water quality observations at some of the diversion points. Next slide, please. So then we have to make calculations. So this is a hydrograph of all those manual staff gauge readings we took at Etowana Debris Basin. In the red boxes are staff gauge. So we'll get out to the basin, walk up the levee, get out our binoculars, and look at that staff gauge, which is located at the very bottom of this particular basin. And as long as we're getting water coming into the basin, we'll go out there daily at the end of the storm We continue to go out for a few days and measure data so we can calculate infiltration rates at this basin. And then we'll kind of go back, assemble this data, make calculations based on changes in storage in this basin over time. Next slide, please. Our daily inspections include looking at water quality and if diversions are clogged up. This is Lower Day Basin at Day Creek. So you can see on the photo on the left, good clean water coming down the creek at around 7:30 in the morning. By 2 in the afternoon, we're out there looking at it again, and the water's sort of that muddy Colorado River looking water. We have like buckets with ropes. We'll throw them over the edge, sample them. Sometimes this water might look cloudy, but it's still settleable material. It might be fine sand and not necessarily silt and clay. If we divert that silt and clay, we can clog the basins up. So we'll observe these conditions, stop diversions for a period of time, return later, and start the diversion again so we're not clogging the basin. On the far right, what you're looking at there is a deflated rubber dam with water going over it. That's that black piece there. It's the deflated bladder. The diversion structure is on the right. It's got a bunch of leaves and sticks and things against it. So at each of the rubber dam houses, we've got long rake poles. We'll lean over the guardrail, clean off all that debris so that when we put this diversion back in, reinflate that dam, the dam diversion is not clogged by this storm debris. Next slide, please. And so then we start doing calculations. We try to do the calculations as they happen, but sometimes we get multiple storm days in a row and these calculations have to wait because we're out in the field making operational decisions. But here's what goes into this. We need to calculate our storm volume capture from two things, the change in volume in the basin and the infiltration rate of the basin. So the change in volume we get from changes in water levels over time, the infiltration rate is how well the basin percolates. We try to update that infiltration rate to make it contemporary with these storms, which sometimes means that we have to wait till the storms end to get that. So we get water level rise. It's date and time, water level, four pieces of data for the beginning and end. Infiltration rate, same thing, date and time, beginning and end of that calculation. We take that information, go to our stage storage curves, and again, get four more pieces of information. The beginning storage and the end in storage gives us change in storage, and then the average basin wet area. That's the beginning area and the end area. We average those. We apply an infiltration rate over the area over the duration of the storm. So four more pieces of data. 18 recharge sites with about 45 basins means we collect every storm and utilize about 540 pieces of information. And in December, we had 11 rain days, which is close to 6,000 pieces of information that we had to use in our calculations. So we put this all in a spreadsheet here and do our calculations. You don't necessarily need you to look at the numbers here, but just want you to know sort of the level of intensity that goes into these calculations. And if we don't have the numbers the day after the rain, this is why we're still kind of verifying the information is correct and doing the math. We've talked in many groups about, hey, can we automate this process so we don't have to pick these all by hand? There's many reasons why I don't think we would want to do that. I think we lose sort of sight of the operation and what the data mean. And there's plenty of opportunities to make mistakes of just letting the computer calculate these numbers for us. We can sometimes overestimate or underestimate the recharge if we pick the wrong data point. Sometimes, for example, you'd have a basin that's full and spilling. And if the computer picked the high water line, it might be a foot over the spillway and that water leaves the basin and would be an incorrect calculation. Next slide, please. So I want to take you on just a little quick field trip to some of the basins during the rain. This is the San Savain basins, basin one on the left, basin three on the right. It's pretty rare for these basins to get so much water that they spill all the way through. And on this particular day, basin one spilled to two spilled to three spilled to four spilled to five, and five spilled back into the San Savain channel. So basin one here, kind of a interesting thing you can see, there's a small whirlpool about 30 feet offshore. This water level is about 5 feet higher than the actual outlet structure. So we've got about a 3-foot diameter pipe that's horizontal between basin one and two. And there's so much water coming into the basin that pipe cannot handle that flow. It will go over the spill crest just to the left of where I'm standing in about an hour. And thought it was kind of neat to see a whirlpool out in the water. Basin three, again, it rarely spills, but here's a picture of it spilling over there's a concrete riprap type of spill structure there. Next slide, please. What you don't get from these photos is the driving rain and high winds that we're standing in to take these photos, and it's probably like 45 degrees. Basin four here on the left, it's not one we typically monitor because it's only about a foot to a foot and a half deep. It's more of a broad area for the sandstone basins to kind of make a big turn, and water cascades quickly from four into five. Basin five then is shown on the bottom right. You can see the huge amount of flow coming in on the bottom left, and it's rapidly filling. There's still some islands of dirt in this basin left over from the initial construction. So that's what the mounds of dirt that you see there. Flood control district gradually picks away at these mounds, and over the last 10 plus years, they're probably about half as high as they used to be. Next slide, please. This is the College Heights and Upland basins. We occasionally have lively discussions about these two basins. They're right next to each other. You know, which one do we use? College Heights Basin has a great infiltration rate. At this depth, it's about 1.3 feet per day. Those numbers, statistics are down in the lower left. This basin is used heavily for imported water. We can put up to like almost 20 feet of water in this basin. At that depth, it's percolating 2 to 3 feet per day. We use this basin in the second series of storms, not on the December 14th. When we don't know how long of a rainfall event we're going to have, it's better to use the basin that already has water in it versus one that's already dry. It just makes those calculations simpler. It's 12 less pieces of information we have to get. But when we got to that December 23rd storm, we started using College Heights, and we used it continually through the rain. In that month of December, we captured 26 acre feet in College Heights and 171 acre feet in the Upland Basin. The picture of Upland Basin there, it's 22 feet. And just for reference, the parties have a 200 acre foot agreement with the city of Upland to divert water into Upland Basin and store it for recharge. So we didn't intentionally divert any water here. Most of this water came in through the storm drain system. There's a 10 foot diameter storm drain that comes down from Foothill Boulevard and the watershed that is around that area and fills up Upland Basin. So you're looking about 9 acres at 0.5 foot per day of recharge there in Upland Basin. And that's generally the end of the field trip and the presentation. I'd be happy to address any questions that the group might have.
Thank you, Andy, for putting that together and for joining us today. Any questions or comments for Andy? Well, we know rain ends up falling a lot of times on holidays and stuff, so appreciate you and your team, and what you guys have done over the last 15 years is impressive. And Andy, you've been at the helm of it, so thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much for having me. Be happy to come back anytime.
All right. Thank you. Bring some more rain, and then you can come back.
All right.
Any other IUA updates? I'm not sure if Josh is on and he has any updates.
I am. Good morning, Chair Birch and members of the advisory committee. This is Josh from IUA. Now, we've had a good start to the water year, and I wanted to provide a brief update on the drought conditions. As we all saw, and as Andy has shown us here, is, you know, the recent December storms brought timely precipitation and increased snowpack significantly. Today, the metropolitan member agencies heard some good news that we do anticipate DWR will announce a 15% allocation. So it's really good news for all of us. I think we've been looking forward to hearing that. So that's unofficial, but it's hot off the press. However, you know, we've all experienced what California brings, which is a highly variable hydrology. So, you know, we received these surges of rain and shortly after returned to dry conditions. So we're working closely with Metropolitan Water District and our retail and regional agencies to advocate for near and long-term solutions. Metropolitan Water District, through its member agencies, is updating a water infrastructure projects list that you have probably all heard of, and that will help Metropolitan further advocate for funding opportunities that we're also interested in. We hope that aligning the new infrastructure investments and funding opportunities will be key to continue increasing our resilience for the region. And we'll provide further updates as we hear more from Metropolitan Water District. That completes the brief update. I invite Three Valleys to provide anything further. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it. So going on to other member agencies, I don't know if Matt or Craig or anybody from the team is on.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Matt's here.
Hey, Matt. Go ahead.
I can vouch for the 15% allocation. I heard the same thing this morning directly from Adele at Metropolitan, so I'm assuming that source is valid. So that's great news. As you can know, and the great news is welcomed, especially after the last couple of months of hearing the grim news that we've been getting. The one thing that still want more storms up on the north, as you know, it's been pretty dry up north the last three and a half weeks, but fingers crossed, February and March will bring more storms and potentially that allocation will maybe go up. That would be incredible. Lastly, the only thing I want to report on is we have our leadership breakfast back after a 2-year hiatus. It's on February 24th at the Sheraton Fairplex in person. We check there often to make sure that they're still having it in person. So it is on. We do have Mr. Brad Kofi from Metropolitan is going to be presenting on the current water supply conditions at that time. So if you haven't signed up, please do so. It's right on the front page of our website. It's $30. And encourage anybody that's interested to go. So that's all I have, Mr. Chair, unless there's any other questions.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it. Do we have any updates from Western? All right. Sounds good. All right. Moving on to item 4, information. This is the annual notice on the intent to change safe yield, which I think we get as an information item. Unless anybody has any comments on that, I'm going to move on. All right, committee member comments. Anybody have comments for the group?
Mr. Chair, Dave Crosley.
Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Thank you. Chino just wants to express its appreciation to Peter to meet with us to continue this discussion of Chino's concerns pertaining to the rules. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. I'm glad you guys are meeting. That'll be good. Any other comments from any other committee members?
Yeah, this is Jeff Pearson. Chris, I'd like to welcome you to the helm of advisory. I think it is long overdue that you've taken this type of a step, and I welcome you, and I think everybody else does too. So enjoy your year in the limelight. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it. I'm sure I'll be calling you asking for help. So thank you. All right. Anybody else? All right. Moving on. Peter, any other business?
No, sir.
All right. And I assume we don't have a confidential session?
Correct.
Correct. All right. With that, we came to the end of the meeting, and I'd like to adjourn in memory of Jim Therrell. I think a lot of us had the opportunity to work for Jim, and we heard some of the heartfelt memorials during our meeting last week. But Jim was, I think we all have fond memories of our experience with him, and he meant a lot to the region. So I'd like to adjourn the meeting in the memory of Jim. So,
amen.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you all soon.